see? So we're already remembering and relearning things, right?
Yeah, we are professionals and almost certainly like A-level, S-tier podcasters.
This is how I've been trying to sell us to people when I ask, you know, like, hey, do you want to give us like a press interview? We're like super professional.
We definitely know what we're doing. We're not just bumbling through this as we go along. Certainly not that.
Oh, boy. Well, we're so professional, I actually have, since knowing, okay, so last time was 67.
Right.
That means this is 68.
That's correct. Counting still works.
Woo!
We did it.
All right, man. My bones and joints and all other things on me hurt due to the homeowner's minute.
Andrew.
Yeah.
What did you do in your homeowner's minute that caused every part of you to be hurting?
We are getting new gates.
Okay, let's hear it.
The front of our house has some gates that were, let's say, dilapidated.
Right. I believe there was talk on the last homeowner's minute about them being renovated,
falling off the hinges, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this past weekend, Saturday, Matt and Alex came over, and we took some jackhammers and sledgehammers and angle grinders, and I don't have any gates on my house anymore, and there's a giant pit in the ground where the guy's going to come tomorrow to sink some new steel posts into the ground.
Nice.
And prep for some new modern-looking, snazzy gates, man. It's going to be the best-looking thing on the outside of the house by far.
Sweet, dude. So, like, yeah. As I look at the house, the right side of the house?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And yeah. Then, like, a little bit on the left, like a smaller one?
Yep, uh-huh.
Okay. I'm just trying to picture it in my mind.
The most reason my body hurts is that I have a 10-yard dumpster.
Yeah.
That is almost full.
Yikes. That's a lot of stuff, man.
Well, we also had, you know, that old cinder block wall rubble been sitting around waiting for this project. So now it's like carting it all out of the yard.
Mm, that is a lot of work.
It's some work.
That is some manual labor.
But I'm cheap, so I'm not hiring anybody else to do it.
That definitely feels like the kind of project I would choose to pay for because I am lazy.
Yeah. I just think about, like, you know, how much labor is if you're really trying to be fair to people. And not that I don't like paying people to do things, especially we'll do that when I have to do some, you know, irrigation and things I don't really have expertise at, or like actually putting this gate together and in the ground because this guy's going to come weld it in place.
Right.
Those are things I'm willing to pay people for, but the things that I can do to save $100 here and $100 there allow me to do that. So frugality is the name of the game. And just causes, you know, your biceps to cramp up while you're podcasting.
Well, you know, feel free. No one can see you stretch out and flex, you know, right here. Just get your little work on.
I'm doing the Globo Gym Cobra to try and stretch out
there
my
arm.
There you
go. That's right. Make a python's hiss. Well, that sounds like it's going to look really awesome when it's done.
Yeah, I'm sure when it's up and running, I'll post a nondescript photograph so people can see at least the gate.
Nice. Well, I look forward to it, man. It sounds like it's going to be cool.
I hope the work is worth it.
Sometimes doing the work yourself is its own reward in some ways. Well, my homeowner's minute is not too different than yours. We had some gardening done in the front of our house, and some of the plants had gotten a bit too big, I'll say. Probably due to lack of care from the owner, I'll say. I think that...
I like that you're not hanging yourself out to dry here.
I super should. Look, the result is, you know, we didn't want these plants anymore. They had grown like far too big. We're more or less dominating the yard when they had not been planned to be that big. So we took a trip to Home Depot, grabbed several different plants to replace them, and got some help tearing out them. And now the front yard looks much nicer.
Nice.
You know, it's a process, right? Getting those giant things out. But now it's done, and the process is now finding places to dispose of all this yard waste because our trash cans are full. So, you know, they're you know, they're going to go out tomorrow, and then it's going to be, you know, three more months worth of slowly putting out parts of these old plants.
Yeah.
And including one bag, one of these plants was one of those like fern-like looking, not fern, like the top of a palm tree, kind of like frond-like, except the fronds had these really sharp spikes on them. It's a pretty looking plant, like a desert kind of plant. But it had kind of died, but the spikes are still really sharp. So you put it in that bag, and now anytime you go anywhere near that bag, there's like a 50% chance of getting stabbed. It's not wonderful.
It's funny, but it's not funny.
No, it's not.
We've all been there and spilled beer because we were walking by a spiky plant.
Yep. And it sucked. So, you know, but the front yard looks much better now. So hopefully we can keep it that way this time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Progress all around. I think it's going to be a big Blizzard day.
Yeah. You know, I have still been playing some Blizzard games, so I would be very interested to talk with you about some of them. I'm guessing you have also been playing some, and maybe not the same ones as me.
You're a wise man, but I don't think we should go much further before we say that it's nice to bring people back onto the show, and experts in other Blizzard games that maybe I haven't been playing very much are valuable.
I would agree with that.
Okay. Back on the pod, the podcast. Ryan, hey buddy.
Hello.
You were our Hearthstone quote-unquote expert, basically the only one of us to have ever reached Legend, and so the one we turn to when we have Hearthstone real questions.
Oh, and I am brimming with expert knowledge.
I can tell. It's beaming across the internet. We were just talking about you and saying it's nice to have people back on. Recurring guests are an amazing thing. People willing to put up with us more than once. So thanks for coming back.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So we said this is going to be kind of a BlizzCast because there's been some updates to some games, and we want to talk about a lot of them, or some of them. Do you want to hit Hearthstone off the bat, anybody?
Yeah, let's do it. I actually spoke with Ryan a little bit near the release of the Knights of the Frozen Throne, and he hooked me up with a pretty legitimate druid deck, I thought. Turns out to have not been the only legitimate druid deck.
Turns out, if you make a druid deck, it's legitimate.
That seems to be the case.
I've seen a lot of Nourish shenanigans recently.
Oh, Andrew, Nourish is the old hat. Welcome to the ultimate infestation, which is a card that, like Nourish, gives it costs 10 mana, but instead of only drawing 3 cards, you draw 5, but you also gain 5 armor and summon a 5/5 ghoul.
Yeah, that seems fair.
10 mana. It turns out that's really good.
Yeah. It kind of seems to go with the rebalancing of the curve that's been happening. Can you talk a little bit about that, Ryan, and the ladder games you've been seeing?
Well, I mean, at the moment, the ladder games you're seeing are Heroes of Malfurion. But besides that, the games have definitely become, well, the first, you know, weekend of the expansion, you had the amazingly fun control meta. And then people got tired of that very quickly. So things have kind of balanced off in general. The meta's in a very, very weird place at the moment because Druid is so strong. And it's not just like, I think it's the first time that a class itself has been so strong.
Because it's not like this is just one Druid deck that's good. There's like 4 really good Druid decks.
I think it's safe to say, I think it's the first time there's ever been a set that was released where you looked at every single class spell for one class and gone, okay, that's incredibly playable. Okay, that's the best card ever made. Okay, this is incredibly playable for every single spell the class got.
Yeah, and like at least one of them you could maybe justify not including if for some reason there weren't decks that flooded the board with minions. But there's never been a game in Hearthstone, I think, where someone hasn't tried to flood the board with minions at some point of the game.
So Druid allows you now to just play the super greedy ramp deck, and then you go, oh, my opponent is flooding the board with minions. Okay, I'm just going to cast a spell that summons 1/5s with taunt until the end of the game.
Yeah, it literally will summon as many 1/5s as you have space most of the time. It's just like, how many people do they have? You probably get that many 1/5s. It's absurd.
I actually don't know what bad card Druid got in this set.
In past, it's been like people discovering, oh, wow, this Shaman deck goes really fast, faster than anything you can do. Oh, wow, this, you know, Warlock deck floods uncontrollably and you just can't catch up no matter what you do. Do you think that the control meta that came out, that I've watched a decent amount of like some of the warrior attempts and all this stuff, people got tired of it, and that it's actually pretty good in this new rebalancing of things that came? Or is it just like before where, no, still going fast is better?
Well, I mean, I think just in general, the appeal for the casual audience is always going to be fast is better, because you get more games under your belt that way, win or lose. So the popular quote-unquote aggro decks are always going to be preferred by the casual player because it lets them get more games per hour in. I think at the start of every expansion, you get the gentleman's agreement where you're going to put the Pirate Warrior aside for 1 or 2 days and just mess around with the cards.
Yeah, you know, it is also everyone wants to try the new stuff, right? And after everyone has tried the new stuff for maybe a week or 2 weeks, then people want to go back to winning.
Yeah, messing around is fun. Winning is always more fun.
Okay, so is there a way to be winning other than just playing Druid?
Yes. There are a lot of... I think what this set did, like Un'Goro coming off of a rotation, a purge or whatever it is, losing all the other sets, had an important role in having to be a very, very firm base for the set. Like, the Un'Goro cards needed to be what you had, 50% of your deck comprised of. Like, it needed to be these big cards.
They're going to be around for 2 years.
Right, exactly. It has to be the base of everything going forward.
Hey, guess what? You're going to see a lot of Tar Creeper from now until the end of time.
Exactly. I mean, they added some very, very great base cards. Like, that could have been its own standard set. The cards were so good, and that set was so strong. What this set did, and what it's doing a great job doing, is adding really, really strong filler cards to fit into decks. And what I think a lot of the cards in this set do that Hearthstone hasn't had before, outside of the only card I can think of is Implosion or like a Yogg-Saron, is that there hasn't been many comeback cards in the game. So there hasn't been any big swing card that, like, if you play the Jaina Death Knight, like, you're always going to have a way to potentially come back in the game because you're just going to heal forever and you have a super strong hero power. There's a lot of cards that just let you win from behind now.
Oh, interesting. Because one of my complaints was always basically, well, after turn 5, I basically know I've lost. There's no way I'm ever going
to
catch up.
I mean, even back to the early beta, nothing was worse than just seeing someone coin innervate out a Yeti and you're like, okay, the game's over.
Or even worse, a vicious fledgling.
Exactly.
And the, like, now that the Death Knights for most of the classes, and we'll get to the fact that some of them maybe aren't so good, but for most of the classes seem to give you this ability to, you play the Death Knight, and now all of a sudden it's a very different situation from you were before. Even if you were behind on the board, you play the Priest Death Knight, and all of a sudden you've machine gunned down half of their board or more, their entire board, and they can never keep a minion on the field. And now all of a sudden all your threats get to go unanswered, right?
Exactly. There's a lot of cards. Like, I actually don't think there is a bad Death Knight card. I think there just are still bad classes in the game that hold the cards back. But like, all of the cards are incredibly strong. I think I saw, and I haven't independently verified this myself, but supposedly every card in this set has texts attached to it. And that's the first time ever.
What does that mean?
The only exception is the Snow Flipper Penguin, but he's technically a beast, so it counts.
Oh, like it all has some sort of effect.
They have some wording, like taunt or some effect, like when you do X, Y happens. Like, every single card in the set has some text attached to it.
There aren't any like 4/3 vanilla minions or whatever.
Yeah, how many base sets can you make without having accomplished like every iteration of the point values you get at each mana cost?
Hey man, we can get some like 9/1 stealth taunts in there.
Yeah, and I really hope that they just never go back to making cards like that.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the need to have bad cards in sets or, you know, filler cards, but having like every card have something attached to it, so in some universe it can be used, is very nice.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit, and Ryan, I don't know if you've caught up on Gwent at all and some of the mechanics of Gwent, but one of the things that I saw in Gwent is that even though some cards may not be good because of other decks, every card in that game seems to have text on it, and every card you can think of a way you'd want to try to use it. And it's actually, some of them are really good. They just don't work because of the decks you're playing against. So,
or even some of those things might not be very good, but at least there's something.
Can I pose a conspiracy theory here?
Sure.
I think, especially looking at the power level of the druid cards, and I could just be, you know, making a wild assertion here, but I think they may be leaning towards doing something along the effect of phasing out the quote-unquote standard set.
Oh, they're just going to start sunsetting some of the base set?
Yeah. I think they may, because I know a lot of pros have talked about in the past where they want to see that gone because it leads to, you know, like, when hasn't a druid deck used Innervate type mentality? Mm-hmm. Like, I think they're trying to lay this groundwork and a framework for in a year or a year and a half from now, making a drastic change like that.
So that's an interesting idea, but then you wonder, well, if they're laying the groundwork now for that kind of a, you know, a new base set or some kind of new, you know, fresh start or whatever, then what happened? Like, what do they do with Wild then? Do they just like let it go and just be like, whatever, man? I guess they kind of already have.
They could do something similar to what Magic does where they iterate their format. So you add another format on top of Wild. You could add like a Year of the Kraken format type thing to the set and just have different formats you can always queue into.
That's an interesting idea. I want to play Wild, but I only want to play Year of the Kraken or Year of the Mammoth Wild or whatever.
I think you could end up with a place where the base set is still around, but the base set is basically like the 1/1/1 mana pirate, the 1/2/2 mana pirate, the 1, you know, the 2/3/3 mana pirate.
Well, I mean,
pirate.
At some point, like, that's what Wild's going to be, is if they continue the track that they're letting Wild go on.
But the, so what I'm saying is you'd sunset like they did with Hall of Fame, right? You'd get rid of Innervate, but eventually the Hearthstone base set would still be there. It's just the cards with no text. You just get all the cards with no text.
Well, I mean, that's something that I think they should consider down the line, and I have to assume that at least internally is a discussion that comes up to attract new players, is adding a larger base pool that players get initially.
It would be interesting, at least, because, I mean, you know, games like Magic stay fresh by having that evolving base set, right? You have a chance to onboard people who've never played the game before because, hey, this is the fresh start. There's nothing from before matters. If you play now, you have equally as much stuff as people who played, you know, for years.
They right. need to significantly increase the rewards in the game to allow people to accomplish
you just need to log on
quickly.
For the 2 weeks they randomly give you double gold, which was the greatest thing ever.
Exactly. And so, like, that's what I was gonna try, you know, I was glad you brought that up, Andrew, because I felt like they have increased those rewards, you know, mostly because of what Ryan is talking about. They ran some random promotion for a couple of weeks where everything was double, and doubling your gold, it turns out, gives you a lot of gold. Like, it goes up pretty fast.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, they definitely did do some work in getting more cards and more out into the ecosystem, you know, sort of as a, I don't know, as like as a compensation, but definitely as like a way of getting more of the set into people's hands. And, you know, they gave away more free packs than usual, it feels like, this time, right? You got the three, you could have up to 9 packs before the release happened, and then a few more after doing all the solo stuff.
That sounds similar. I haven't done all the solo stuff yet. I've been having too much fun just playing in ranked.
The solo stuff has been great, as usual. We talked about that a little bit last week. I just think it's their, like, the best stuff in Hearthstone, the, like, very ridiculous voice work and how they have, like, responses to so many different random things.
And I actually think what was nice about this one is people didn't pay for it exactly, so they could do, you know, FU difficulty level.
Yeah, and some of them, Like, we talked about, there was one I'm sure everyone has done at this point, but the one you literally can't damage except with weapons. That is just like, nope. Here's like five classes you just can't play against this boss. Like, you're not going to have a chance. Not that it's impossible, but like, really, if you want to win, how about you play like Warrior or Paladin, maybe?
Thank God we have all those extra deck slots, right?
There we go. The technology finally caught up.
Let me ask you guys this. I know, Andrew, you probably haven't played that much, but was there any card in the set that actually surprised you?
Arphis.
You mean just in how bad it was?
Wait, what? It's not bad. It's good.
I mean, it's a 4 mana 2/2. It's pretty terrible.
It's not competitive.
The Priest is a very playable class now, and they have this card called a Potion of Madness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that takes your dog and gives it to them. Well.
Yeah, no, I thought that was going to be good because you'd get a really cool card out of it. But
I have been asserting to people for a very long time now that Hearthstone is the one and only game to look for all your actual WoW lore at this point. So Arphis is definitely a big plus in that regard.
I definitely think we may have talked about this on the pod last week also, but Ryan, I'm interested to hear, do you know the foreign translations of Arphis?
I do not.
So the German phrase, I don't remember what the like phrase is in German, but it translates to the Lich King.
I approve.
And in other languages, it is also similar to like, you know, the male dog king and stuff like that. And I'm disappointed that we did not get it named Arphis, comma, the Lich King.
I feel like that is definitely a missed opportunity by the localization team.
Right. But in an answer to your question, I actually was really surprised by the several of the cards that allow you to interact with your opponent without like some kind of choice on their end.
Yeah, I totally know what you're talking about, and I agree fully. Like, I think for me at least, I totally just cut you off mid going your thing. But for me at least, my favorite card in the set is just from a design standpoint is Mountain Fire Armor. The 3 mana warrior card, 4/3, and it has Death Rattle. If it's on your opponent's turn, gain 6 armor. And so it just adds really, really cool interactions to the way you and your opponent play. It may not be the most playable card. It may not actually be seeing any competitive play right now, but I just love that idea of the interaction.
What do you think about the cards that are like ripping things out of people's decks and stuff like that? Do you like that type of gameplay in Hearthstone?
I mean, the only card they really added was the one Death Knight one where it literally steals the card from your opponent's deck.
There's a couple different cards, right? There's that one, yes, literally takes something from them and gives it to you. There is the 2-mana, 2/3 gnome that discards a card off the top of their deck, which is actually
the strictly it's a bad worst card. River Crocolisk because it's not it's a beast.
It's a bad card. I'm not trying to say that it's good, but it actually does allow you to interact with their deck in some way. And then there's Skulking Geist, which interacts with both players' decks, but if you're playing it, you can know to play around it, and the opponent can't. And Skulking Geist just destroys all 1-mana cards in players' hands and decks.
Okay, and wastes a deck slot in your own.
Yeah, it's not again, it's not necessarily good, but it certainly is a big, like, it's the kind of hate card that you would want to, if for some reason a combo deck got out of control.
Yeah, if for some reason you're living in a meta where over 50% of your opponents are druid, it's potential that you want to put that card in your deck.
Well, is there a world where after the next expansion, Warlock beefs itself not only from discarding its own cards, but maybe from discarding your cards?
Not at the rate they're printing those kind of cards.
The discard mechanic is already unfun enough for you. I mean, I guess maybe that's how you balance the discard mechanic, is you make both players discard and then everyone's not having fun, so it's balanced.
There's definitely some funny decks that use the Warlock spell, which gives a minion to the other player, and then you damage it a bunch of times using Defile, so that they end up having to discard their whole hand because the minion, you know, causes the owner to discard a card, and you gave it to them, and then Defile damaged it like 7 times or whatever, so they just end up discarding their whole hand. It's funny, but I don't know if it's actually good, because, like, discarding their whole hand is all well and good, except that, you know, you did still give them the minion, and You don't actually have any threats on the board.
It's an interesting card. I just don't think it's ever a good card. But I mean, I'd rather have interesting cards than, you know, just like they did in Gadget Zan, where it's a 3-mana 4/3 taunt. Like, no one plays that. Yeah. No one cares. I'd rather have a card that does something funny.
That was my point about Gwent, is like, even if it's not good, it's interesting.
Yeah, I'm very heartened to see them printing cards like that, even if they're no good, right? Having the card be there means in some deck, in some crazy madman scientist's laboratory, you can come up with a deck that allows you to do something insane, like discard their whole deck or something. And that deck is not going to be any good, but it can be fun to do that stuff.
Now, I know JJ was doing a lot of Gauntlet, not Gauntlet.
Line, read the script.
What's the thing?
The arena?
Arena. I know JJ was doing a lot of Arena before the release. Has anybody tried Arena since the release?
I have not tried Arena since the release. I only did my free games they gave me because I hate going into Arena and winning 12 games and getting 350 gold in a pack as my reward.
Yeah, I did not. I played it because they were offering free Arena runs and Frozen Throne packs. So it was nice because there were lots of people playing Arena at the time. And so when there are lots of people playing Arena, it's easier to do well at Arena. And, you know, when it was, I'd imagine that now sort of the usual suspects are back out there. And I am not a dedicated Arena player. And I don't generally like pay enough attention or care at playing Hearthstone in order to compete against those kinds of people.
I remember after a few weeks being a little bit underwhelmed, despite the baseness and utility of Un'Goro, not thinking that it really changed much of anything. So we're now a few weeks out. What do you think?
Well, I think something needs to be done about Druid.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that you're going to be able to find a deck that's just going to be amazing against all the various forms that Druid is taking. Unfortunately, like, you definitely would, I think there are enough tools and cards out there that you could build a deck that gets, like, a really good win rate against a certain one of those Druid decks, right? But there's, like, 3 or 4 maybe really good Druid decks, and you're not going to find one that's good against all three.
We're back to the issue of the Jade mechanic being extremely punishing to control-style play, which is annoying because the first time ever you have legitimate great tools for nearly every class to have insane control decks. Like, you can just, I think basically every class, maybe except for Hunter, can just straight destroy a Pirate Warrior or any form of aggression, like with some pre-made deck. Like, you can make a control deck that will crush aggro right now, you know, like win, you know, 60% plus your games against aggro. The only problem is the moment you get queued up against a Jade Druid, you lose.
And because there are, you know, greater than 30% of the ladder, it seems like, playing Jade Druid, that knocks your positive win rate there down low enough that it doesn't become worth it to play that kind of a deck.
Uh-huh,
so if you tech against only Jade Druid, then, well, now you have a 70% win rate in that matchup, but you maybe lose to the, like, big ramping Druid. Oh, well, they you tech against that one, and now you're going to lose to the, like, token aggro spammy druid. And, like, well, then, like, you can't win against all three at the same time. And all of them are using similar cards or a certain set of cards that are similar between the three decks. And there's just nothing you can do about it. Like, they don't, mm-hmm. those cards don't interact with you.
Right. Like, and that's the larger point there, is it's not necessarily the Jade mechanic that's the issue. It's the fact, it's kind of like when mid-range Shaman finally hit its, you know, its peak, you know, a year and a half ago or whatever. It was just, the class was so bad. Not saying Druid was necessarily bad for so long, but the class is just ramped up, literally ramped up, so many tools where now there's just like 50 ramp mechanics. And then on top of it, they added a 10-mana spell that refills your hand and puts a 5/5 on the board and gives you armor and kills a minion and develops the board, which I think that card's fine. I think it's the greatest card they've ever printed in the game because it's amazingly fun.
Yeah, it's an awesome card.
Can't have that and a class that can ramp to 10 mana on turn 5.
Yeah, and the unfortunate part about it was that the way that that Druid deck was good was because towards the end, if you got into a control match, you could recycle that one one mana card and just keep filling your deck with it and filling your deck with it so that you could survive that encounter.
Well, and right? Like the bigger issue is, right, the cost previously to the Druid ramping like that, you know, using Wild Growth and Jade Blossom and everything to get a big, or Nourish to get a big mana advantage over you, was that their hand then had like three cards. And if one of those three cards wasn't like an 8/8 or something huge to like pay off for the fact that they sped up to seven mana or whatever, like if they drew Innervate off the top when they're top decking, like they just lost the game, right? Because you just could go wide on the board. They have one card in their hand and mm-hmm. it's Innervate and they just lost, right?
Right. Or you could necessarily just go, okay, I'm losing this playstyle. I'm going to make a super aggressive deck and counter them. Only Jade Druid can run Spreading Plague and just summon 1/5 with Taunt to stall even longer.
Yeah, and so that's the issue, right? The deck that needed more time to stall now has it, and the deck that needed more ways to get cards into its hand now has easily the best spell in the game that draws both a bunch of cards and has a bunch of other positive effects.
For Jade Druid, your draw mechanic was hoping you draw the Gadgetzan Auctioneer and go infinite with Card Loop. Just cycling with spells nonstop. Now you don't even need Gadgetzan anymore. Yeah. You just go, okay, I'm just going to play one spell and draw five cards.
Do you think they've kind of leaned into deck archetypes that people wanted to play rather than trying to keep forcing people to do Beast Druid? And
I don't know, man. They keep pushing Discard Warlock. No one wants to play that.
Yeah, it's like, I wonder if the, like, you know, they have some kind of like Monte Carlo simulation bot internally or something that like played 80 billion games of Discard Warlock and decided that, like, hey, this deck is actually pretty good if, like, you average all the outcomes over infinity time or whatever.
And you know how to play it perfectly.
And you know how to play it perfectly or whatever. But the feeling of playing that deck is so bad, you will never, ever, ever want to do it. Because, like, the one time everything goes great, and then you play the card that discards your two of your own cards, and it discards the two cards you needed, like, you're just going to be crushed and never want to play that deck again.
Yeah, that deck is... The discard mechanic, the way it just discards a random card, is not fun ever.
Like, yeah. If there were mechanics that allowed you to choose the cards that you discarded,
it'd be the best thing in the game.
It might be, like, insanely powerful. But that's not where we are.
Games have it so that your discard is always the lowest cost card in your hand.
Or in Gwent, you just straight up choose.
Some way to control that randomness of which card you discard would make the deck insane.
Silverware Golem every single time.
Wait, right, so we're just basically getting back to the base argument some people have about Hearthstone here, which is if it's less random, maybe you can make more tactical decisions and make a mechanic better.
Well, I mean, I actually, but it turns out that you just expansions, it's been much less random.
Right, yeah. Well, adding except Discover rather than just random and adding, you know, less random effects has had that effect.
I mean, you even got Deathspite back this expansion, although it's slightly better and slightly worse in different regards.
The issue I have with this expansion's, like, they didn't try to... It didn't feel like they did some stuff like they have in the past before Un'Goro, where they were like, here is obviously a pre-built deck. Like, sprinkle all of these cards in there together, and you'll have a great deck, guys. Trust us. And then obviously, like, half of those cards were hot trash, and so if you ever put them in, you would just lose. But yeah, so they didn't try to do that, and therefore let people sort of come up with their own ideas of what decks would be good or whatever.
Right.
Which is nice, but
is in terms of that is where you're talking about, you know, deck archetypes they're trying to push in people and stuff. Is I don't know if you guys remember the old WoW meme about Ghostcrawler always maining a mage, and that's why mage always got buffed and would be the best class. Someone's got to be maining a druid over in the Hearthstone development team, because it's just like the deck archetype to push. Okay, you know, Hunter was too strong. Let's just make, you know, Druid the beast archetype and then give them everything they ever need to make that viable in like a push. And they're like, oh, okay, no one wants to play that. We're just going to randomly go with Taunt Druid as a thing now, even though that was what we were pushing for Warrior for the longest time. And by the way, we're going to give them all the cards they need to pull that off in one set. Whereas poor Warrior was getting it sprinkled in and then getting phased out with cards that would have made it actually good. They get Bolster attached to a minion that's even better when the class has a way to summon like six taunts in one turn.
Yeah, it's really like a bit insane, to be honest. I don't know that necessarily that Druid just, you know, the I don't know if how the Druid cards arrived at the state that they're in. You know, was there like, you know, a lack of playtesting or just a lack of feeling the meta together? Did they just not expect people would just continue to play Jade Druid or something? I don't know, because they gave them a bunch of really good cards in this set. Like, they couldn't have. I want to believe that they didn't just see that how obvious it would be that Jade Druid, you just slot in X and Y, and then all of a sudden the deck is amazing.
At this point, they have some pretty good, at least former quote unquote professional players. That, you know, that's what they used to do, streaming or playing as their main job on the balance team now. So I don't think that's possibly something they missed, right? They had to have seen that?
You would think, or maybe they just, you know, like, maybe they just decided that it's the people can tough it out for half a year, and when the Jade stuff rotates next year, it'll be all right? Like, I don't know. I can't.
I mean, that's the thing that's annoying, right? It's like, I don't even think Jade's an issue. I think Jade's a perfectly fine and fun mechanic. I mean, Jade Idol sucks, but they finally added a counter to it. It's just they added everything else to the class. They just really need to get rid of Innervate.
Yeah, I don't know what you do to make Druid better. I don't know if you change Ultimate Infestation or Innervate or Swipe or
I did actually see the perfect design balance change from, you know, 2 years ago, Hearthstone team, what they can change Ultimate Infestation to. You can change the spell to be Ultimate Infestation, and it randomly deals 1-5 damage, gives you 1-5 armor, draws 1-5 cards, and summons a 1-5 health minion.
Oh, man. That's funny. That is an A-plus meme.
What if Innervate was 0 mana for 1 mana?
Well, I mean, then it's just counterfeit coin, right? It seems a little weird.
I don't know. Like, would that be enough to make it less annoying than it is? It would certainly change a lot of the cards that Druids end up playing, because you wouldn't be able to hit stuff like 3 and 5 really easily.
I think a more tactful, like, Innervate change is, and I mean, kind of works with the way it used to work in WoW, so it's not just completely out in left field, is make it so that you can't go past your current mana cap with the 2 crystals. So it just restores 2 empty crystals this turn.
Oh, okay. So you can't cast a 4 mana thing on turn 2. You can only cast 2 mana
things. 2 mana things, yeah, right.
That could be cool.
I mean, I wonder if then they just make a change across the board to anything that would allow you to go above your current mana cap, right? And then just say, this is how all these effects are going to work from now on.
Right, and I think we're hitting a bigger issue, which is, when they have such a wonderful tool to design and build the card game in a digital space, I feel like there needs to be more proactive changes to the game itself.
Well, Andrew, we have some experience with a digital card game that has made more proactive changes.
Man.
How did you feel about the way Gwent was taking its balancing when it was hot in the meta of updates?
Slapped some updates real fast and real hard, but it's in a beta though, so it's hard to tell.
And I think if I recall, Hearthstone did a large different sets of like large changes during the beta itself.
They did.
Yeah, so it's hard to say. If I experienced that while I was a player in Standard, I would think that maybe they didn't beta test it enough or something. I don't know. I like changes, and I like decisive changes, and I like changes where they try to tool around with things, or, you know, this weather update that they had in Gwent where they really reworked how things are functioning and you're not damaging nearly as much stuff, but also you can kind of, as the player that's getting damaged with weather, play around it or use it to your advantage. That type of stuff can change the way a game is played so quickly versus just like, oh, well, we're talking about Innervate and whether or not, you know, Innervate should be removed or not removed. Well, like JJ said, if you talk about the global scope of, well, maybe we just say you can't go above your mana cap, right? So, you know, like you mentioned, Ryan, you can only cast 2 mana things. That's a whole new thing, and it changes like the way Rogue would function if Miracle Rogue was still a thing. It changes a lot. And so you'd have a more sweeping meta change like you did with the last two Gwent changes where, except for Northern Realms, all the decks changed.
You know, it's a, it feels like it's a different philosophy. I sort of like, it comes from my background of playing Dota, but there's the philosophy it feels like at play when a Dota patch comes out is that they take every hero and they adjust some small thing about the hero up or down a little bit. And maybe it's not every single hero literally, but it's the vast majority of them. And all of the popular ones get nerfed in some small way. They tweak a number down by 50 points or whatever. And then all the heroes that aren't played get buffed by like 10 points or 100 points. And it just creates this like shift in the way you would want to play the game by just adjusting small numbers here and there around the edges. And like, I wonder if Blizzard could take, it doesn't seem like they want to currently, but if they could take that course by, say, going through the base set every patch or whatever and adjusting numbers up and down, or, you know, adding a mana cost or a, you know, a small change to a various series of cards just to keep the meta fresh for no other reason.
And I know it's hard because I know with their design cycles, they're working, you know, two sets ahead right now. So maybe in their mind, everything's fine because it corrected itself internally on their end when they release the next set.
Oh, yeah. It turns out the next set has all these fixes to these problems.
And right. I mean, the funny thing is Jade Druid is so, or Druid in general is so oppressive right now. No one even gets to see that Quest Mage is just as bad for control metagames.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that can get slapped down pretty hard though, right?
No, I mean,
unlike theory, the Druid.
Well, it's same thing. Like same thing that counters all that is aggro. So you just get this rotating cycle of what becomes popular based on what counters what, which is slightly better than on, you know, just what Druid deck I'm going to be facing right now. I actually saw some versus data that was interesting to me in the fact that I think it may be all levels or at least rank 5 and higher, the percentage of Druid players is higher than Hunter players at the time of Undertaker Hunter before the Undertaker nerf. And what actually, and people were complaining about it, but what actually strikes me as interesting there is that, you know, during the Undertaker Hunter times, you had one deck. It was, you know, you queue against Hunter, you know what you're facing, it's Undertaker Hunter. You queue against Druid, there's three or four different Druid decks right now that are literally the best thing in the game. So it's strange how much more dynamic it is in that sense where it's the class is that strong in general.
And you could disguise which one of the two or three you're playing as by, you know, changing the way you play your opening turns, and you might make them, and you know, they've already, in some of the cases, right, if you didn't mulligan for the aggro matchup, you just lose on turn one at the mulligan, right?
Outside of the aggro Druid deck, which is maybe the strongest one of them all just because of how fast it is, all those other decks are going to be running ramp cards. So you're just ramping the 10 mana, casting Ultimate Infestation and wondering what's coming next.
Because it's like turn six, they have 10 mana, you have, you know, your six or whatever, and you still don't know which deck they're playing.
Right. Which ramp deck? Am I going to get a Malygos dropped on me? Is it just a traditional Jade? Is it just big Druid? Like, what's going to come out of it? And I mean, I like when classes have that. I think that's when the metagame's the best, is when you queue into a mage and you go, okay, is this freeze mage? Is this aggro mage? Is this some sort of tempo mage? When you don't know what it is, and the classes that have traditionally been the strongest are the ones that have that, where you go, okay, what am I going to be facing against?
So what's the stinker right now? What shouldn't people touch?
Hunter?
I think it's Hunter. I mean, Hunter has some, you know, very niche situations where it can fit in. I actually honestly think that one of the best Death Knight cards is the Hunter card, which is just incredibly strong. The rest of the class is bad.
The Hunter Death Knight, right, allows you to create these really ridiculously powerful minions.
Oh, I mean, it's hilarious, the combinations you get.
And it's pretty hilarious to play as. I definitely tried it out a little bit when in that first couple weeks and had a good time, but the deck did not win very much, and the support isn't there.
Your early game is Alley Cat. Like, you gotta somehow make 1/1 stick on the board, which isn't what other control decks do.
And you have a bunch of aggressive and mid-rangey minions, and then this hero Death Knight that would give you this amazing late game, but you don't have minions that are built to support you into the late game. You have minions that are built to hit them in the face and win on turn 7. And so, like...
And they got yet another legendary that just doesn't fit with the class itself.
And, you know, maybe this is them laying a foundation for in, you know, 2 sets or whatever, they're going to have introduced a bunch of really powerful control hunter cards or something, but we certainly don't see it here. And I mean, this Death Knight would be amazing if that deck was good, but it's not, so it's not.
That's one of the great things that these last 2 sets have done with between, even though the quest didn't necessarily work out on paper as well and weren't that played, but between the quest and the Death Knights, there's a really, really nice foundation for future cards to build on. So that you can always go back a year from now and go, okay, now this card is suddenly playable because of new introductions, which wasn't traditionally able to do in the past because you had, you know, vanilla minions.
And it makes actually playing in Wild, like, really interesting.
I don't even want to imagine what that's like.
Oh, I've been playing several games in Wild recently, and it's just like, you have no idea what they're going to do, right? They have so many options. And, you know, the old cards in Wild that were always amazing, coupled with some of these new cards, is just... Like, I think every deck could run an OTK if it wanted to. Like, it's at that point. You know, but then a lot of them still don't have to, right? Because still those powerful curve minions still exist, right? So you can lose to, hey, guess what? Old mid-range shaman, you know, just as easily as you could lose to some kind of really crazy combo Exodia quest mage or something.
I think... I don't know how long a discussion this is, but maybe the problem isn't some of the balance in the cards as much as it is the trickle feed of one taunt, and then like trying to theme the sets rather than theming the release of class design. Like, here's the set where we want Warrior to be the taunt deck, and every single card that comes out is taunt warrior. I think that maybe they're too afraid to make people angry, because they didn't get any cards for their deck type, or because the one warrior deck that everybody thought was good didn't get any good cards, and maybe taunt warrior wouldn't be as good as some other new version of a druid deck or whatever that comes out, but they maybe aren't willing to commit all the cards of a set in the class to make something work.
I mean, you're definitely getting to like design philosophy areas there. And I think the bigger picture issue may be, and especially like, I think with this one is interesting where, you know, they're looking multiple sets ahead and the sets are based in this yearly pack. So they know they want this type of theme built around it. But like for this set, especially, I know that Un'Goro they did internally, they worked on all their own, but then for Knights of the Frozen Throne and the next one, they brought in some former Magic the Gathering design guy to help them build the 2 sets. So you could have actual clashing philosophies going into that.
Yeah. I wonder how much of an influence that, you know, that outside perspective on the way they're creating and balancing the sets influenced what they're doing. It would be interesting to be a fly on the wall in that discussion of like, how do we want to shape these Death Knight cards to give people options, right?
Basically, all I'm saying is I'm praying they don't nerf Ultimate Infestation and they nerf Innervate instead. That's my one plea.
I definitely feel like they have to have had Innervate as a card that, you know, is discussion. Like, there's discussion around that card already. Or there had to have been at some point.
And I think that comes down to the design. The one thing they can probably change philosophically is moving cards to Hall of Fame, not just make it exclusive to the start of a new year. Make it happen in between sets even.
Yeah. And I don't know if doing that would be enough to change the way Druid plays. It certainly would change the way all their decks are built. I don't know how much... You know, how much would it impact the current deck if you had to take all the copies of Innervate out? Yeah, it would probably hurt them pretty bad.
There's another game out there that doesn't need any of this discussion because it's already the most perfectly balanced game in the history of games.
What game is that, Andrew?
Brian, did you ever play StarCraft?
I knew you were going to segue to that with where you're going, and all I just want to say is, how can it be so balanced when those dragoons can't walk right?
No, them not walking right is part of the balance.
Yeah.
But they literally themselves are not balanced.
They would be imbalanced if they could... If they had perfect control, the dragoons would wreck that game.
Yeah, if the AI for the dragoons was good, the game wouldn't be fun because they would just win.
I don't know if you remember this, Andrew, but I think one of the last times I actually played that game was on the Nintendo 64 with you playing co-op.
I was 100% going to mention that.
You guys played StarCraft 64? Why?
Ryan had StarCraft 64, and
Sorry.
Why not, man?
Why not play co-op where you can obliterate an entire, 8v8 map because you're playing co-op on easy?
The comp stomps.
It was a Nintendo 64 comp stomp. It was pretty amazing. We haven't mentioned at all on here that the thing we talked up a couple weeks ago is out. StarCraft Remastered launched.
I have heard that there are a decent number of people playing online Brood War again these days. You can find a online 1v1 Brood War match.
Quickly.
So people claim.
Maybe faster than a StarCraft 2 game even.
I honestly think the Hearthstone news is big. The changes to that game are big. The population for that game is big. For the company, though, I think this is almost as big of a release, and it's just not getting any press at all, I don't think.
I don't know. I've seen people talking about it. I don't know how many people are just talking about it because how really crazy it looks when you scale up some of those movies and stuff into the higher resolution.
So they definitely, we had speculated possibly them redoing the movies or something like that. They definitely took what they had and up-resed it and recolored them in a way so that they don't look like all pixelated, but they don't look very good.
Yo, that 1990s animation still exists.
Yep, it's still in there. And it's kind of really strange to look at a game where the sprites were designed at an age when you needed that sort of visualization to be able to see what was on the map, and then see them up-res to a very high-resolution map underneath them, and then they kind of seem like they're stuck on top of it, like one of those old magnet toys, you know, where you like move your characters or move your trains on the magnets.
So, Andrew, have you played any of it?
I have been playing it. I have played the first 4 Terran missions, and everything is harder than I remember, and everything is easier than I remember. All of the things that you learn playing StarCraft 2 are gone. You can't rally, you know, you can't, like, queue, you can't...
There's no select all barracks button.
Yeah, all your barracks are on different keys.
No select idle SCVs.
Nope.
No mules.
Yeah, SCVs don't automatically mine.
Yeah, your groups only fit, like, 15 character units in it, right?
12, I think, yeah. Each group is 12 characters, and they kind of, like, don't know what they're doing or where they're going when you click to go a certain direction. Each command center has to be on a different key. It's crazy.
You can't tab between your barracks all in the same hotkey. You have to have them all on separate ones.
Nope. You can't do any of that. And then at the same time, I remember, you know, like the week that StarCraft came out, trying that survive for 30 minutes Terran mission and just building up a huge base and then getting crushed towards the end of that mission. And this time I built 2 barracks and just walked out and killed everything on the map. So
turns out macro is really good in that game.
Yeah. It's interesting revisiting essentially a very staple part of your memory without being able to remember more than just like sitting in front of a TV trying to play StarCraft with an N64 controller.
I heard about that game that kind of blew my mind is that, you know, they put out original StarCraft and Brood War for free, right? you can play those games now without paying anything. You don't get these up-resed skins and the high-definition models and stuff that Andrew's talking about. But you can still play them in their old low-res glory, I guess.
Oh, the free-to-play player dilemma.
You can play multiplayer matches using the free copies against people with the high-res copies.
Now, is that just, like, blatantly pay-to-win or what?
You can. There's a button you can press that turns it from high-res to low-res.
Oh, wow.
At any time, apparently.
Well, can you scale up from the low-res one during the multiplayer match, or are you stuck with the low-res if you're on the free version?
So the assets don't upscale, right? There aren't, like, the high-resolution assets, but the game is, like, a 4x3 screen at, you know, whatever resolution it runs at.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that was the other big change, is, like, I'm looking at it on 16x9, you know?
Yeah, because the old game definitely was not.
16x10 or whatever.
Yeah, apparently the... I don't know how it works in multiplayer, because if you're playing against someone in 4x3, having 16x9 would be a big advantage, letting you see the side of the battlefield or whatever before they can.
Like you said, pay to win.
Yeah. Literally, it's pay to win. This is ridiculous, guys. What does this company become?
Yeah, so I wonder if that's a case where, like, it locks you to 4x3 also if you're playing against someone like that or something. I don't know. I have heard that in the middle of the FMV, you can press that button and swap to the low-resolution movies. So I think you should try that, Andrew, just for a little comparison.
Okay, you need to send me a link and I will report back. But any other Blizz? Have you guys been getting your free Twitch boxes, by the way?
Oh, I mean, I haven't bothered with that, but I don't want to segue you too far away, but I want to ask you if you think the StarCraft re-release is responsible for saving us from the mess that was the launcher name change. Like, because it just would have been, you know, blasphemous to queue up for anything that wasn't Battle.net, right?
So the online launcher name change, now it's BlizzardBattle.net instead of Battle.net?
They kept the Battle.net in there because people were freaking out. Did you see their Destiny 2 release, right, or press release right after they did the name change? Or even they kept calling it Battle.net?
Yes.
Yep.
I texted JJ. I said, did you read the Destiny 2 thing? Yeah. And I said, how long ago do you think that was written? Because it all says Battle.net on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Like, no one proofread this one, did they?
Or more like the people, the like brand people, marketing people that changed the name decided that and then didn't inform anyone else. And everyone else just kept calling it Battle.net.
I don't know why they needed to change it. I guess marketing or whatever, but it like wasn't a thing to freak out about. In my book, the little icon says Blizzard. It doesn't say Battle.net. So whatever, it's the Blizzard launcher.
I expect the reason they did it is they're like, hey, we can't trademark the name Battle.net. It's too generic. We can trademark the name Blizzard Battle.net.
Oh yeah, but the weather phenomenon is less generic. Okay, I follow.
Yeah, their company name is already trademarked and whatever, so then, you know, tacking that in front makes it okay in some way, I guess.
I mean, this many years later,
who cares?
Everyone's
just going to keep calling it
Battle.net, right? Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm not going to change.
No one was going to stop calling it that.
Yeah.
I still feel like that StarCraft re-release had to have saved it.
It's probable. Well, I didn't really have anything on the Twitch thing. I was just wondering if anybody got anything good from their boxes.
Nope.
No, but that Junkertown preview, though.
So what is that? I told you this is going to be a Blizzard episode.
Exciting new map for Overwatch. It literally looks like it's straight out of Team Fortress 2, too.
Yeah, like Team Fortress and what's that other one? Borderlands?
Borderlands, yeah. It looks great.
So it's just a map.
Yeah, just a new map. But they had a little brief short. Like they're having
a payload
short
map though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a new payload map, and maybe the payload's actually going to explode, judging from the little short they had with it.
Yeah, I saw the short. I was so hoping, like, drag me back in for more single player, man. I want single player
the uprising. You just gotta wait till next year at that time. Hopefully they're gonna have a new uprising event. You're not excited for competitive Lucio Ball?
I mean, Lucio Ball's fine. It's part of that stuff that I'm talking about, you know, like giving us other game modes. Deathmatch is an interesting addition to that game, I think.
I think Deathmatch is going to be great for that game.
Yeah, I want to hear your opinion on that, Ryan, because I don't understand why you would add free-for-all deathmatch to that game. Other than, like, okay, the why not answer is the only one I understand.
Literally the only game mode in a traditional shooter that they don't have in that game. I think it'd be great. Like, they had...
Team deathmatch makes a lot of sense.
Right. I totally understand team deathmatch. I just not single player, like, 1v-all deathmatch. That part doesn't make any sense to me. Because, like, you're just deleting half the characters from the game at that point. Like, are you going to play Reinhardt in that mode? Are you going to play Mercy in that mode? No, you're never going to play either of those people.
Well, I mean, sure, but again, like...
Like, I'm not saying it couldn't be fun. I'm sure there's a way they can make it good. I just don't understand why you would do that. Like, the team deathmatch one, I would understand perfectly, right? All kinds of, like...
What if they make the solo deathmatch gun game, but instead of the guns, it's the heroes?
That would be rad. That would be really rad, actually.
Okay, I don't know what that means.
So gun game is like in a traditional first-person shooter game, they have a gun game mode where you start off with like the lowest possible weapon with like a pistol or something.
It's like everyone starts off with a pistol, and every time...
Once you kill someone, like you get a new weapon. Yeah, like kind of like Halo gun game where you end, then you have to end with like the melee weapon kill to like win the round. So you can start off with like, you know, D.Va pilot or something. And then every time you kill someone, you become a new hero and have to build it up there to whatever the last one is.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, that would be cool.
But I'm sure you could do that in custom, too.
Have you guys played like any of the – it's down now because of the summer games. But like the 3v3 lockout elimination, have you guys played any of that mode?
I have not.
I have not either.
It's actually really unique and fun. So it's a 3v3 death match where, you know, once you kill everyone on the side, you win. But once your team wins the round, your team is locked out from using those characters you won the round with for the rest of the game. And so it's first to win like 3 or 5 okay. rounds.
Yeah, lockout modes are okay. It makes sense. I've heard of lockout modes before, so yeah.
I mean, like, that's cool. That's fun. Like, same thing. I think it's, you know, it's, they kind of have had deathmatch in there with the, like, Echo Point Antarctica maps.
Yeah.
Where it's the small 3v3 ones. But, I mean, I think more player deathmatches sounds fun.
I want to see, like, 16v16, like, team deathmatch.
I love where it puts you know, not having the respawn puts more of a, your life is more important. Like, it's more important to be tactical. You're not going to see people go be idiots and just run off on their own flank. And
the Genji player isn't just going to, like, run out throwing ninja stars everywhere or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It makes everything more tactical and fun. I think that's, I mean, why not? Like, the game's doing a great job of adding free content in a variety of ways. Like, they had no intention of keeping Capture the Flag around outside of whatever the Chinese New Year event was, and everyone loved it so much, so they're like, okay, we're keeping it and adding two more maps for it.
Oh, they're doing a great job adding content. I have no complaints on that. I purely selfish point of view that I enjoy the event content like Uprising more, where it's cooperative. Oh,
yeah.
I mean, and
yeah,
all that
stuff. Uprising was the best event they had easily, just because of the lore perspective it brought into it too.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much space for that, and it's like, you know, when they're worrying about balancing deathmatch and stuff, I worry that there's no time to sit down and come up with a new lore map or something. But I don't know what their teams are like, so
I have a feeling that they got a lot of positive feedback about that event.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if it goes the way of, like, you know, eventually they fill the year out with monthly or bi-monthly different modes that they rotate in and out over the course of a year. And then they can mix that up with the seasons or whatever, and they end up with, oh, hey, this is the co-op month, and this month is the deathmatch month, and this month is the uprising mode, and this one is the capture the flag, and this one is, you know, and they just have this whole stable of modes that they can rotate in and out as people get interested in them, or as people get bored of the one that's there.
Yeah, and just, like, I mean, always saying more options is better, but, like, I don't know if you guys have messed around with the custom games at all. Like, it's crazy the kind of stuff you can do to just
custom game stuff is nuts.
Yeah, just do whatever you want.
The best custom game is 76 Predator mode.
Yeah, I haven't played it, but I've seen that. Yes,
it's really funny. I had a great time playing that.
Did we cap off all the Blizzisode?
I mean, I don't know if you guys heard the news from like last week or something where there were like leaked data mine files for Warcraft 3 HD.
Warcraft got an update, but nobody knows why.
So that's what it was. Something to do with Warcraft 3.
Warcraft 3 got its first update in like 15 years, and no one really, as far as I knew, knew why. But
I mean, it's kind of like how the presumed next WoW expansion got leaked in a data mine thing just when they had assets in there. I'm sure it's building up to November.
Well, maybe they just had to repatch it to put back battle.net.
Yeah, that's
got to change the name back, right?
Oh, that would be amazing if that was the reason.
There you have it. I think that caps off an amazing amount of Blizzard, and more Blizzard. All the Blizzard.
It was a cold, frosty Blizzard this episode.
Yeah, there must always be a lick kicking.
JJ, hit us with plugs.
Yeah, well, if people want to send us emails, you can hit us at podcast@wewergamers.com. That's an email address. We have a website, wewergamers.com. You can go on there, find the pods, and, you know, subscribe to our RSS feeds, which you can find on Google Play and iTunes and Stitcher and wherever else fine podcasts scrape those links. You can also, you know, get at us with those emails and tell us how you feel about things on Facebook, which is We Were Gamers. Our Twitter and Instagram are also We Were Gamers.
Ryan, you got any plugs? You want to hit people to hit you on Twitch or something?
If only I had any form of social media, then yes.
You know, he's the smart one here.